We wouldn't reach the star for 500,000 years, assuming we could anchor Vega in one spot, which of course we can't. Nothing in the galaxy ever ceases to move. So look for Vega in the northeastern evening sky, face the star, and you'll be facing the direction that our solar system moves around the center of the galaxy. Our program is Stardate. Our writer and producer is Deborah Bird. Stardate is a production of the McDonald Observatory. We're at the University of Texas at Austin, our zip 78712. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Thank you.
you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
And a very good evening to one and all. It's 11 minutes after 10 o'clock, and you are listening to Brain Damage on your radio here in WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 13 degrees outside, and I'm Eric Corley with you up until midnight. I just made an interesting discovery. We have a brand new Clash record here at the radio station. Just came in, apparently. It's a double record. It's not really a brand new record, but it's kind of a, I wouldn't even say greatest hits, because none of these were really hits. I mean, the Clash never got any airplay, we all know that. But it is kind of a story. It's called The Story of the Clash, Volume 1. So that means there's another one of these coming out at some point in the future. And what I found was the only part in the record, apparently, the only part in the record where there is not a song, where there are people talking. So what you will hear now, right before you hear a song, is words. I don't know what they say. I don't know what they're talking about. Let's all find out together. And then we'll hear a song after that, and then we'll come back and do the rest of our program.
About a year ago.
Yeah, about a year ago, right?
When I saw the Pistols, right, I suddenly realized that I wasn't alone in the fact that I couldn't play too well. You know what I mean? I was in a group where all these people could play quite well, you know? And I felt inferior to it, you know? And when I saw the Pistols, I thought it was great, because it just suddenly struck me that it didn't have to matter that much, you know? And then I said to the other guys in my group, wow, what a great group. And they all went, right, and then these guys, I met these guys, and I thought they looked great. And they said, they got a group, so I said, I'm interested. So we went and had a go with it. I just joined it.
You had the name, didn't you?
No, he didn't have the name.
Where's the name come from?
He's a great guy.
We say what we want, right, and people will either, like, catch on to it and get hold of it, right, and grasp what we've got, right, or they won't, right, and it's up to them, right? I mean, we ain't gonna, like, fucking preach and preach and preach, right, until it sounds like fucking nonsense, you know what I mean? Like, you sound like some fucking evangelist.
But, talk about your single, then. No, well, it's, I think, I like it like that, because the first time we went to studio with a famous producer, he said to me, look, you come, you better pronounce the words right. So I made a big deal of it. I really tried to pronounce it, and I just took all the piss out of it. You know, it just sounded like Matt Monro was doing it, right? So I said, bollocks, I'm never doing that again. So, and like, it's, to me, it's like Jamaican stuff, right? You know, you can't understand the Jamaican stuff until you listen to it about 100 times, right? And then you get it, right? But the same with this, right? If people can't understand it, then too bad.
What are you working on, Waltz? You got any idea what you're working
for? Well, I've got my idea, right?
Yeah.
But I only tell the other two about it when I feel like it, right? He's got his idea, right? And most of the time it's rubbish, right? He doesn't have any ideas at all. See? That's how it is.
Me and Jarl are quite functional, right? He won't let me live with him. Right? And also, we don't agree on hardly anything, right? Because, like,
but we are working on the same thing, aren't we?
Joe is more salt of the earth. Basically, we hate each other, right? Because we're jealous of each other most of the time.
Clash here on Brain Damage from the new record called The Story of the Clash Volume 1. And we heard what sounded like the Clash riding on a train before that. Don't know what it was, didn't really hear anything they were saying, but that's something that was never heard before in any Clash record. Not the song, but the part where they're all kind of muttering together. And this is a brand new double album. It's got, 8 songs on one side, on that side, that's 15 altogether, and then add another 7 to that, that's, what's that, Jim?
I lost track,
I had 7, I had 8, that's 15, and another 7, 22, and then another 6 is 28, there's 28 songs on this record, 28 songs altogether, The Story of the Clash, Volume 1, and it's got all kinds of weird words in the middle. They have a picture of the people in the band, and they have this typewriting over it. And it's very hard to read, but there are words in there. I don't know what they say, but I'll read them someday. So I just happened to notice that about 5 minutes before the show started, and I said, wow, I have to play this. I have to sort of make note of this historical moment. And, I'm glad I did.
Yes, it's nice.
It is.
I'm glad, too.
That voice you hear is Jim Weiner, who just did the classical music program. And congratulations on getting through what I know is probably the hardest show of the station.
You really think so?
But to do a classical, yeah, because if you pronounce one thing wrong, there's a whole fleet of people that will jump on you.
Well, theoretically, yes, but I would say that the listeners have been... very tolerant, because there are some times where I stumble and I really haven't gotten castigated that I could ever think of. I mean, perhaps they just don't bother to call up and castigate me. Perhaps they're castigating
me in absentia,
but and not that I would blame them. I mean, they have a perfect right to castigate
me. We don't show you the letters, Jim. there is a room downstairs where we keep all these letters. Now, you see...
Well, I'm glad that people at least pay attention.
You can say what you like about rock and roll. You can say what you like about, you know, the hardcore music and reggae and all that kind of stuff, but you can mispronounce things. You can get away with things, and people don't jump on you. I mean, I could get on the air, I could say Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, instead of Lynyrd Skynyrd, and I wouldn't get letters, I wouldn't get phone calls, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have to worry about it.
Mm.
And people make mistakes all the time. In fact, some people say that's what we're here for. But that's something else.
Well, actually, on today's class... I'm sorry, were you about to say something? I didn't want to interrupt you.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I looked like
I was going to?
Well, I thought maybe in the inflection of your voice you might have been about to, and I didn't want to interrupt, but I just had wanted to say, in line with your mentioning the classical program and getting through it tonight, for some reason, I was having difficulty remembering the simplest thing. We have some tickets that we're giving away to some classical concerts. This is a feature we've added to the classical music programming. I think it's a very nice feature. There are some very fine concerts that we have free tickets to give away to. And at one point, I mentioned that during the news, I would, or just before I started reading a newscast, which would be a few minutes long, that after the newscast, I'd give away some tickets. So after I finished reading the newscast, I very efficiently forgot to give away the tickets and went into the longest piece of music that I played on tonight's program, All 16 Slavonic Dances of Antonin Dvorak.
Oh, dear.
Which lasts for over an hour, and I really didn't think it would be right for me to interrupt the music, cut it short.
For a ticket giveaway, yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's not that the ticket giveaway is trivial, but just the people who enjoy Dvorak or enjoy the Slavonic Dances specifically, I didn't want to frustrate them, so I let the piece play out, and then I reminded listeners that I'd be giving away, that I was going to give away tickets, and mentioned that they could call up at that point. And then it was time for me to read another newscast. And so I started reading that newscast, and I think I was getting calls from people who wanted to claim the tickets, which is great. But they must have thought, since they weren't getting through after a couple of minutes, while I was reading the news, and I was on the mic, so I couldn't answer the phone, that the other people had won the tickets, and so they hung up. And again, that's nothing wrong with what they did. I'm not complaining about the listeners. I'm really complaining about myself.
Well,
and so I still have these tickets to give
away. In actuality, you were still reading the news, and the phones were just ringing.
That's right.
People think that we have lots of people here to answer the phones and everything, but lots of times, you know, we're the only ones in control.
That's right. Which again is not a bad thing. It's just that just the nature of the way the setup is, and there's nothing. I'm not complaining about that. This is a non-commercial radio station, and I know you know that, and I'm sure most of the listeners know that. But we don't always have that extensive a staff present at a given moment at the station, and so as let's say some commercial stations do, where they might have an assistant that's present that can answer the phone, and even then, even at some commercial stations nowadays, the announcer, when they give away tickets, has to answer their own phone, and
times are rough. Times are rough for everybody.
In some ways, yes. Again, I'm not saying that we have it rough. This just goes part of part of the territory with a non-commercial setup, and it's not bad. It's just that sometimes people might not realize that if they're not being picked up right away, it doesn't mean that you necessarily did not or were not the designated caller. I was asking for the first couple of callers, and I can understand what people would think if they weren't getting through, that maybe they were too late in calling. So,
do you want to give away these tickets?
Well, as I said, this is all to say I have actually four pairs of tickets now that I have accumulated here, and if anybody would like to see the Bay Area Symphony Orchestra in concert tomorrow, I have two pairs to give away to the first two callers, and if anybody would like to see the North Shore Pro Musica Group perform on May 15th, I have a pair of tickets for that. And I also have a pair of tickets to the Long Island Philharmonic Concert on Saturday, May 21st, to the fourth caller. So first two callers each get a pair of Bay Area Symphony tickets. Second caller gets tickets to the North Shore Pro Musica Group. And the third caller gets tickets, or rather the fourth caller gets tickets, fourth caller, tickets to the Long Island Philharmonic. And what I'll do is, because I don't want to interfere with the calls we might be getting on the air, I'd say between now and 10:30, let's say, anybody who calls in that order.
Well, we can, or, you can take the calls. Well, when was the last time you read the newscast?
About an hour ago.
Okay,
yes.
And I'll read a newscast, which is sitting in front of me, and you can take the calls. But let me first tell the people that are thinking about calling that this may not be something that you know, this may not be something that you particularly want to even go to, but Think of it this way. You have these tickets to go to a classical concert of some sort. Now, you're sitting alone at home watching the Golden Girls or something. This could be the concert where you meet that right person that you're willing to spend the rest of your life with. This could be the concert where you find a $20 bill in the parking lot. What I'm saying is you have to open yourself up to new experiences. You have to do something different. This could be the concert that you're out at when your house explodes, thereby saving your life. You'd have no idea. Of course, it could
That's
work.
True. I shouldn't laugh.
It
That's
could
true.
Work the other way, too. I mean, this could be the end of your life going to this concert. Who knows? But you're never going to find out by just sitting at home.
That's true.
So come on, folks. And let's dispel once and for all this image of Long Islanders as not wanting to take risks, not wanting to... Do you know the whole rest of the country is laughing at you, Long Island? Do you know that? So,
yeah, as a matter of fact, if I open the door to this studio,
yeah.
let's see if we can hear some of the chortling going on.
Yeah, they're out there, all right. I think that more people are starting to laugh now. But give us a call. Take the tickets, all right? Take them off our hands because, really, you know, we have to pay for these tickets, right, if they don't take them. We have to pay
I don't know. Duty tax?
I don't know. We have to pay
something.
I don't
think we do. I think that actually these organizations... very graciously given us the tickets as part of, I suppose that they have a certain amount of tickets set aside for promotional purposes where they will give some away to people. I don't know exactly if we have to pay for them. But as a matter of fact, at this very moment, a pivotal individual involved with these tickets has walked into the studio. I guess she can't hear what I'm saying necessarily.
I think
but,
so. I think she can.
Oh, she
Hello,
can.
Jim.
Hi, Jerry. How are you?
Oh, very good. I've been listening to your saga of the giveaway.
Oh, you have. I'm glad you did, and I'm so sorry, Jerry Zuckerman, who is not only I'm sure familiar to our listeners for conducting a classical music program herself during the week, but is also the director of classical music programming on this station and the person that coordinates and handles all these ticket giveaways. Is here in the studio
now,
and now at this very moment, and so
well, no, yeah, of course. But I just thought of something. We can both continue to talk, and Jerry can take the phone calls.
That's true.
Wouldn't that be great?
That well, if she wishes. Otherwise, I'd be happy to to.
That way,
to
we
take
can
care
we can comment on the news as we go along.
Why don't we just usurp the mic and let Eric take the phone calls?
Well, I don't know if that's fair.
No, that'd be illegal.
Be kind of like a classical takeover of brain damage. You know, I mean that. I don't think that would befit the image. Classical announcers traditionally, anyway, have kind of a sedate, measured image, and I don't know if that would do, actually.
Well, Jim, why don't you describe the concert one more time? I will give out the concerts, rather. I'll give out the phone number. It's 632-6901. That's area code 516-632-6901. And, Jim, what are those concerts again? Let's hear
Well, we have the Bay Area Symphony Orchestra performing tomorrow. I have two pairs of tickets to that, and that will feature, among other works, Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. I have the North Shore Pro Musica concert, which will feature several pieces, amongst them works by Fauré and Prokofiev, and will also feature pianist Olga Gross, who is a graduate student here at the State University at Stony Brook, who is, as a matter of fact, studying under Gilbert Kalish, who we heard playing the Copland piece, for those of you who were listening just before Brain Damage came on. And she is the winner of the Bentley Glass Award, a very accomplished pianist. And we have the Long Island Philharmonic, oh, by the way, the North Shore Pro Musica concert takes place May 15th, a pair of tickets to that. And we have a pair of tickets to the Long Island Philharmonic concert for May 21st that will feature, among other works, Berlioz's Romeo and Juliet. So that's two pairs of tickets, one each to the... Well, okay, the first two callers win the Bay Area Symphony tickets
and
for tomorrow.
We have one caller.
Okay,
so.
That's great. We have two callers. Okay, they win the Bay Area Symphony tickets. The North Shore Pro Musica tickets will be won by the third caller, and the Long Island Philharmonic tickets will be won by the fourth caller. 632-6901, 516-632-6901
Hold
is the phone number.
We'll be taking you.
And we'll be taking those calls shortly. I think I'll just jump off the mic here and grab that first caller.
Okay, I'll get into the newscast then. And give us a call, 632-6901. Help us give away these tickets, please. We're not even asking for money or anything. Just call and take the tickets. I mean, you know, it's not that much to ask people to call and just take something off our hands. 632-6901, area code 516. Unless you want us to talk about this all night long, which some people might get a thrill out of. Let's take a look at the news then. From the Associated Press, our little teletype machine inside, Poland's state-run news service reports officials at the strike-bound shipyard in Gdansk have agreed to a pay raise. Workers have been striking for 6 days. The service also quotes a prosecutor as saying the strikers won't be arrested if they give up peacefully, and management is quoted as saying they won't be fired. Talks resume tomorrow. And Pope John Paul today expressed support for the striking workers in Poland. The Polish-born Pope says force and superficial reforms are not the answer to Poland's problems. The Pope says a lack of democracy is the central problem of Poland. The Pope received cheers today when he visited about 82,000 young people at a soccer stadium in Uruguay. It's in South America, for all you that don't know that. It's the start of a 12-day, four-country mission to South America. The Soviet Union's Communist Party has been the country's only official party since the Bolshevik Revolution. But an opposition group is trying to change that. A leading dissident says the group, calling itself the Democratic Union, is trying to establish an alternative party and met today in Moscow. According to the dissident, police gathered... Dissidents, I guess. I don't know. I think there's more than just one person in that group. Police gathered outside the meeting, but it's not known if there were any arrests. Aides to Vice President George Bush say nothing derogatory was meant yesterday when Bush called Jesse Jackson a hustler from Chicago. Oh, boy. But the Democratic presidential candidate today accused Bush of having a tendency when he panics to reach out and attack. Jackson went on to say that a president must have, as he put it, a sense of stability and security. A memorial service attended by notables of the opera world was held today in New York for internationally known tenor James McCracken. McCracken died recently at the age of 61. He was scheduled to sing at the Metropolitan Opera last month, but became ill after the dress rehearsal. The British Broadcasting Corporation is reporting 19 confirmed cases of Legionnaire's disease at its headquarters in London. There are also 45 suspected cases. Legionnaire's disease produces symptoms similar to pneumonia and is often caused by bacteria from water-cooled air conditioning units. It really doesn't have anything to do with Legionnaire's. Winning Colors today became only the third filly to win the Kentucky Derby. Winning Colors led every inch of the way in the 114th running of the Derby. Noting that the filly's victory came the day before Mother's Day, the horse's owner said he would like to salute all the women of America as he collects his prize money. It's 10:32. Person on hold wants to go on the air. Okay, well, that's very nice. There they are on hold. We will put them on the air in a moment. The show is Brain Damage. We're on until midnight, and Jim is still talking on the phone. It looks like we had a flurry of calls for these classical tickets. Jim, by bobbing your head up and down, if you can even hear me, I guess he can't hear me because he's not paying attention. Well, I don't know if we have any more tickets to give away, but let's assume we don't have any more tickets to give away. And let's take this call, see what's going on. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello. My name is Andrew Goldberger.
Andrew, you're always the first person on the air on this program.
I know.
That's amazing. Well, what's on your mind this week?
You said you're giving away these tickets.
Yes, I believe we said that.
I don't want any, that opera thing. I don't like that.
Why do so many people not like opera? I mean, I always get the same reaction when we're turning down the radio dial and you hear somebody singing their guts out. You know, it's always, oh, turn that off. I can't bear that. I don't want to hear these people doing this. It's something about opera that turns a lot of people off. I don't know what it is.
Kids, have you seen that listen to opera?
Uh-huh. Now, when they play ballet on the radio, which they don't do as much as they should, you don't get the same reaction at all.
Well, all I know is, why don't you have movie tickets or something? Like
movie
WBLI
tickets.
Does.
Well, you see, we're not WBLI. People don't treat us like WBLI, fortunately.
Well, if you were like WBLI, people would treat you like that.
Well, are we giving away opera tickets? No, we're not giving away any opera tickets. Well, in any event, person on hold, et cetera. Okay, we'll just take them now, from now on. Anyway, do you have any other comments on the tickets or on anything else going on?
Well, I'm on the other phone because my babysitter's watching TV in the other room, so I didn't hear what you're...
Oh, you don't know
about
what we're talking about. Well, we just looked over the news talking about Poland and the Pope and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that strike that's on.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm just trying to get organized here. Forgive me. I have all these papers everywhere.
The Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, we talked about that. The first filly in only three fillies in the history of it have won, and today was one of them.
Cool.
I think that's quite a step forward for all of us.
Okay. So.
Somebody picked up the extension, I guess.
All right.
Okay.
Jim,
are you back?
What?
Yes,
okay,
I
Jim's
am
back.
Actually,
all right, well, thank you very much for calling, Andrew.
All right,
let's give
out
our phone number, 632-6901. We do have another caller, and our number is 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, you guys are just, like, talking about Poland. Well, I'm kind of, like, sitting here in front of my word processor with this term paper about 1980 and solidarity and all that.
Oh, then you're certainly in luck, aren't you, because of all this late-breaking news.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I got this, I thought, oh, gee whiz, well, nothing's going to happen, and I'm just going to sit in front of these really boring books. Although I found one pretty good book, which is really interesting. But I figured nothing was going to happen, so I would be out of luck. But lo and behold, Lech Walesa, is that his name?
Lech Walesa, yeah.
I think it's Walesa in Polish.
Well, yeah, there's all kinds of ways to pronounce things, but I say Lech Walesa because that's the way it looks. But in any event, yes, that's the guy. So how? I guess your paper is doing better now.
I'm still sort of, like, caught up in the history. And how do you think nationalism fits in with all this?
Nationalism? Well, it's hard to say, you know, because you see all these... People accuse unions of being communist, right, in this country. They say, oh, unions, you know, that's leftist. But in a communist country, they don't want unions.
It's an interesting observation.
So where does the nationalism come in? I imagine there's a certain degree of nationalism all over the place, mostly on the part of the anti-unionist, I would imagine.
Well, the caller is asking where nationalism fits in the situation in Poland in general with Solidarity.
Yeah.
I would think that the unions in Poland represent a part of the movement there, the anti-Soviet movement, and definitely a nationalistic movement, because it represents those people in Poland that don't want the Soviet government's influence present there, do not like the influence of the Soviet government there, and feel that they're too much a satellite of the Soviet Union, and so I guess the unions have become a large outgrowth of the anti-Soviet sentiment that's there.
So is the anti-Soviet, is that nationalism?
I'd say in this sense.
Well, kind of, because, like, well, if you're anti-Soviet, you want more freedom for your country, and that's nationalism, more or less.
That's true. Can it be possible for the government not to be nationalistic and to, you know, just bow down to another government, and the people are more nationalistic than the government? It seems kind of strange, but I guess that's the way it is.
Well, I suppose... Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut off the caller.
What?
Was he going to say something?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. No, I was just going to say that the concept of nationalism would seem that to me that as applied to Poland would seem that when, let's say, the Nazis went into Poland, that those in Poland that resisted were being nationalistic in the sense that they felt they were being overrun completely by this other country. And then after World War II, when the Soviets exerted their influence heavily there, and the Polish government really became, although in name, of course, it's the Polish government, so closely connected to the Soviet Union that there was a continuation on the part of some people in Poland. And I would suppose some Polish expatriates who live in other parts of the world, that they probably still feel that their country is, if not being physically overrun, at least is being too much under the umbrella of another country's influence. And,
the Pope, for instance.
Pardon?
The Pope, for instance.
Exactly, yes. I'd say that the Pope definitely would seem to feel that way. And the unions in Poland, I would say, represent both part of this resistance and... as well, a general workers' movement to improve their wages and working conditions, etc. And I guess unions, an interesting observation that Eric made, that union, the sentiment about unions can vary from country to country, depending upon the different configurations, that in this country, the concept of nationalism in connection with unions and connection with accusations of communist influence figures in that there are, I'm sure, numerous people in this country, since I think that approximately, well, a few years ago, it was approximately only about a fifth of the United States workforce was unionized, and that may have even gone down a little bit recently. I don't know if that's changed, but I guess loosely speaking, it's still about 20%. So the majority of the country is not unionized. Not that everybody who's not in a union is necessarily anti-union, but I would say that there is a large number of people in this country that are that do feel that unions are not for the worker, and that they are communist influenced, and that because they feel that they're communist influenced, or even if they don't necessarily feel that they're communist influenced, that if they don't feel that they're for the worker, that they feel that they're against the interests of the United States, and therefore those people in being anti-union feel that they're being nationalistic because they're looking out for the interests of the United States. I personally, as a personal note, and doesn't necessarily represent the opinion of the station one way or the other, these are all personal opinions that we express, but I personally don't feel that unions, that the concept of unionism is a bad concept, and I think it's a good concept.
It can get out of hand, though, you know?
Well, sure. I'd say just about anything can. I personally, again, I happen to be a member of a union, so that's why I'm saying this is purely my opinion. I have found that the union has done that the concept of the union and the union I belong to has done very good things for me, and I feel that they not only have done good things for me, but they have done those things in a perfectly legal and I would say even ethical way, that they've even been instructive to those of us that belong to this union in the area of being logical and reasonable, and certainly striving for our own interests and the interests of the union concept in general, but also understanding that striving in terms of the broader picture of the situation involving the management of the particular companies we work for. I'd say it encourages us not to be unreasonable in our outlook, not being knee-jerk anti-management. For example, we've come to understand through being members of the union, actually, we've gained even more insight. I would say personally, I've gained more insight about working out reasonable arrangements and negotiations with management, and doing so in an ethical way, not in a strong arm way. So the overall picture I have, again, of a union, of course, I could be prejudiced very much in favor of because I feel it's done good things for me. But at the same time, trying to look at it objectively, I don't feel that the union automatically represents some type of out-of-hand force. I think that there's a very big gray area there.
Do you think people should have a choice of joining a union or not?
Well, I'd say that there is a choice that people have, essentially. My understanding of the way the labor laws is constituted in this country is that in a given company or department of a company, if the majority of the people want to belong to a union, they can hold an election and elect to become members of a union. And if the majority don't, then they don't become members of a union. Matter of fact, a particular company I work for, when I joined the union, it was actually just initiated from, in other words, I didn't come to work for a company where there was already a union present. A few of us decided that we wanted to have a union, so we held an election. The majority of us wanted to join a particular union, and so the union came in. We were not strong-armed into anything. We did it completely voluntarily. And
did it cause bad feelings between you and quote-unquote management?
Well, it varies. I would say, first of all, I would say that as things stand, we have an active contract with our company. So there is no, I wouldn't say that in any official way the company has refused to deal with us or with the with the union. But on an individual basis, I'm not talking officially now in terms of business, but on an individual basis, some of the people, not all the people, but some of the people in management did become very resentful of the presence of the union. But not everybody. But that's a personal, that's on more of a personal level. And they have a right to their personal feelings where that's concerned. But as it stands now, we have an agreement that's active. So on an official basis, there isn't any problem that exists.
Does that help your paper any, sir?
I suppose so. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Sure.
632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Well, hi. I'm calling about the tickets.
Ah, you want?
Oh, that's great.
Do we have any tickets left?
It appears that we do.
We have some tickets. Are you interested in taking them?
Yeah.
All right, let me put you on hold, and then Jim will take care of it off mic. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516. And there's a bunch of things I'd like to talk about tonight. I don't know where to start. There are so many fun things going on in the world that one of the most amusing things that I've seen is the latest allegations involving the Reagans and all that astrology nonsense. In an article in a recent edition of the Times, might have been today's for all I know, I think it was today's, the headline reads, "Irate President Says New Book Attacks His Wife." And he is, of course, referring to the book by Donald T. Reagan. President Reagan had harsh words today for a book written by Donald T. Reagan, his former chief of staff, that discloses details of the first family's deep interest in astrology. For several weeks, the White House has been bracing for the book, which is reportedly critical of Mrs. Reagan's influence on the administration's decision-making process. Mrs. Reagan was considered chiefly responsible for Mr. Reagan's White House departure. Now, in a story like this, I have to be careful with all these Reagans and Reagans flying around, but let me try to get through this. Today, when he was asked about the book at a photo-taking session, the president snapped, "Well, I will say this, that I would have preferred it if he decided to attack me. And apparently, from what we hear, he's chosen to attack my wife, and I don't look kindly upon that at all." I wonder if he says that on the White House press service. So I'll give that a call as I'm reading, see if that's even possible to do that. It's been busy every time we've called it. Let's see if that holds true today. Yes, it's busy again. Oh, well, so much for that. Mr. Reagan's book, For the Record, that's the name of it, For the Record, it's to be published Monday by Harcourt Brace Jovanovitz. On the same day, a 12,000-word excerpt will be published by Time magazine, which paid $125,000 for the rights, according to a source in the publishing industry. Strobe Talbot, Washington Bureau of Chief of Time, Washington, I think they mean Washington Bureau Chief of Time, said tonight that the Reagan book paints an absolutely devastating picture of the Reagan administration that could cause the Republican Party problems in the election this fall. Mr. Talbot was interviewed on the syndicated television program Inside Washington. Excerpts from the interview were broadcast on WUSA-TV. That's only one letter away from us, you know. We're USB, but they're WUSA-TV, the local CBS station in Washington. In the Reagan book, the administration comes across as a little bit like the court of the Medicis, Mr. Talbot said, with, he added, a dash of the Keystone Cops thrown in. He said the highly publicized accounts of the Reagan's interest in astrology amount to a small part of the book, but a woman who is a friend of Mrs. Reagan and who offers her astrological advice appears in the book, Mr. Talbot said, as a kind of absentee presence, almost at the cabinet table, or at least right outside the Oval Office. What do you think of that? Astrology in the White House? Is that something to be scared of, or is it just a big publicity thing? 632-6901. Jim, have you been following this story at all? I guess
I'm
not.
Sorry.
I shouldn't have gotten you just when you got off the phone, but
no, okay.
We're talking about astrology and the Reagans.
Oh, yes. You know, I didn't really follow that story too closely,
uh-huh.
Although I wonder how the scientific community feels about that.
Well, it seems a lot of the Reagans' appointments and important moments have been based on the stars. They said, well, make sure it happens at this time. I believe the president was inaugurated at a particularly odd time because the stars were supposed to be in a favorable position at that point. I was reading about this woman who's a friend of Mrs. Reagan and who is the person who offers the astrological advice. According to Don Regan's new book, she was practically, this woman who gives the advice is practically at the cabinet table because of the amount of say she has and
really?
what happens.
Really?
Or not say that she has, but the weight that her words carry. The woman whose identity has not been disclosed but who is based in San Francisco exerts her influence by working through Mrs. Reagan, Mr. Talbot said. As a spokesman, Mrs. Reagan led an ultimately successful campaign to push Mr. Reagan from office early last year, and he left the White House on distinctly bad terms with the president's wife. Friends of Mr. Reagan say the book does not attack Mrs. Reagan personally and only describes events in the White House in Mr. Reagan's tenure. Tom Dawson, the spokesman for the former chief of staff, responded to the president's comments by saying, Mr. Reagan has had and will have no comments regarding his book until it is published, which makes a bit of sense. The White House acknowledged earlier this week that the president and Mrs. Reagan have a serious interest in astrology, and several former administration aides have said that astrological portents influence the timing of a number of White House decisions on scheduling. You have to wonder, did it influence the time?
Also used astrology, we may not know this, we don't know it, used astrology as a means of making decisions, but maybe it just didn't come out.
Well, yeah, everything seems to be coming out in this administration,
mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of funny. Usually you have to wait until after, you know, the president's dead or something, or
right,
after,
right,
you know, a good 10 or 20 years after the administration is over, but it's all coming out now, and that's what's proving so.
So embarrassing. I was going to say, I guess you could kind of call it the debutante administration. Everything's coming out.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, it's supposed to be openness, you know?
Yeah.
It's our own little, I can't think of the word. What's the word? The Gorbachev thing.
Glasnost.
Glasnost, right.
That's
It's our own version of that. Let's take some calls. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi. I'd say it's, like, almost scary that Mr. Reagan using this pseudoscience to base our country's, I don't know, our country's policy on stuff like that, wouldn't you say?
It could be downright offensive, I guess, if decisions are being made based on the position of astrological bodies. But lots of people make those kind of decisions.
It's all right for maybe, you know, maybe should I go to the prom wearing a blue dress or something, but not on, you know, not on the INF treaties. And it's weird.
Now, A lot of us read the horoscopes in the newspaper. We read Gene Dixon and God knows who else, and we base some of what we do on what they say. Now, Mr. Reagan is a person just like all the rest of us. He has a somewhat different job. Isn't it okay for any person to sort of base what they do on what they believe in? I mean, whether it's religion, fortune telling, or black magic.
Well, he's basing the whole country's philosophy on that. You know, he was voted in, God knows why, for to sort of represent us.
Uh huh.
All right, to do that. Don't you think?
Well, it disturbs me. No question about that. It also makes me laugh quite a bit. But when we think of my God, what are we doing here? What are we possibly risking based on astrological signs? It can be worrisome.
Adolf Hitler was the last one to really be into that.
Really?
I'm saying Reagan's a fascist or anything.
Well, Hitler was into astrology.
He based on a lot of his policy on astrology and everything he did.
Well, I didn't know that. That's one thing I wasn't aware of.
That.
Uh-huh. So he would wait for the stars to be in the right place before exterminating another 100 million people or whatever.
Yeah, basically.
Interesting. Well, I'd like to know what more of our listeners think of this. Thanks for calling, sir.
Okay.
632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. This is Dave. My first time listening to Brain Damage.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Holtsville.
Holtsville. Great town.
So, I know that kid Andrew Goldberg.
Oh, you little kids, you all know each other, right?
Well, I'm 13, but he's like in sixth grade.
Uh huh. Well, that's something.
Yeah, he told me he calls every single week.
He does call every single week, but it's good to get someone else calling, and then hopefully you'll call every single week, too. You can sort of race for to be the first person on the air.
Yeah.
But have you been following this stuff about the astrology and the Reagans?
Not really.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you think? Do you think it's something that we should care about, that the president is in, he reads the astrology, he reads Gene Dixon, and bases what he does on what astrology, what planets are where at a certain time? Does that bother you?
I don't know. I guess.
Yeah. Do you read your horoscope every day?
Yeah.
And do you change things that you do based on what it says?
No.
Why not?
Well, sometimes I do, but you know, I don't. It's like sometimes I'm just like, you know, you shouldn't really do that. Sometimes it's really stupid.
Uh huh. Do you think the president has enough sense not to do something really out of line based on what astrology says?
I think he should just do what he's supposed to do, not get from somebody like, you know, another person, not get told by another person what to do.
Uh-huh. All right, well, thanks very much for calling and giving us your opinion.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
I just, like, want to pose, like, one small question to the president. Or actually to, like, just listening people. What happens when the stars say that it's time to bomb Moscow?
Well, now, that's an interesting point. A lot of religious leaders believe that Armageddon is something that's a fact. The world will destroy itself. I believe Falwell says that. I'm not sure for sure if he says that, but I know a lot of these religious leaders say that the world will destroy itself, and from that, there will be the second coming, and everybody, the people who are good will go to a nice place, and people who are bad will rot in hell, and all that kind of thing.
Doesn't matter, we'll all be melted anyway.
Now, Reagan follows these people. There's no question about it. He agrees with Jerry Falwell. I mean, for God's sake, Jerry Falwell just compared Oliver North to Jesus Christ this last week. Now,
I think the funny thing is the fact that
with that kind of person in the White House, you have to start worrying. Does he believe the world will destroy itself in the interest of Christianity or something? And he's got his finger on the button.
I just think the funny thing is on the cover of Newsday.
Uh-huh.
When, I mean, all this stuff is going on in the world, when I mean, instead of, I mean, on the front cover, they could have had, like, in big letters, you know, Poland strikes, or Falwell, or something like that. I think the funniest thing was the fact that front page, big news, astrology in the White House.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that warrants front page news?
Well, I can see where it would. I understand what you're saying, and I completely can understand the irony of what you're saying, that you would expect different topics to take up the front page. I even saw it on the front page of the New York Times. Granted, it was in the lower quadrant or the lower half of it.
Well, the New York Times is a civilized newspaper. They don't put anything in big headlines.
But the most
important news stories are in the lower right-hand corner sometimes.
Well, actually, I think... are you serious when you say it?
Well, they don't... When the stock market crashed in 1929, it didn't make a huge headline. It was at most half a page.
No, because I was going to say, I think that in fact, the most important stories that they give way to is, I think, usually on a world or national scale, is in the eighth column. It used to be the eighth column. Now I guess it's the sixth column. It's the right-hand column.
Well, some people say there's meaning to the style of the headlines, too. When it's all caps, it means something.
Yes.
When it's in italics, when it's bold italics, it means something completely different.
That's true. But this was, I believe... not all caps, and in italics, which had gives it a slightly softer angle. Their most important national and world story, I think, is usually all the way on the right, on top, and the most important metropolitan is all the way on the left, starting at the top. But this was in the lower half, but it wasn't the front page just the same, which meant that they did give it a lot of weight. And I was just going to say, I can understand completely what the caller is saying, that it's surprising to open up the newspaper and see that. It looks almost comical to see Reagan's followers say they follow astrology. You know, you might think you're looking more at something that's sold at the supermarket checkout counter than let's say, the New York Times.
Exactly.
But
And we think that Reagan is he's not all with it, but he's actually more sophisticated than we give him credit for, because what he is doing is making the New York Times look like the National Enquirer. It doesn't matter that the New York Times is telling the truth. They're saying the same sensationalist things, and the whole journalistic ethic is going down the tubes. And simply by reporting the truth.
That's
it looks like trash.
That's a very good observation.
The man is a genius.
Just one thing before I hang up. I just can't wait to see Gorbachev into tarot.
Well, okay.
Thanks
take care.
I think we're going to see some incredible things when Reagan goes to Moscow later this month. I mean, he's going to say something like, "Wow, it's I mean, the sky is blue here too." You know, I mean, I'm waiting. This is going to be. I've got my pen and paper ready. He's going to say some amazing things, and I don't know how it's going to be covered on TV yet. I want to tape every second of this.
It should be. I would think that now, especially, the press will be hanging even more on his every word, and I think you're right about that. Now, I was going to say that I could understand how the caller, the last caller, felt. But at the same time, I can understand why the newspapers, including the Times, chose to report, to give the story such prominence, because usually people do not associate astrology with a means of making high-level or basically presidential decisions. And so it's understandable why that would be given a lot of weight journalistically, because of all the things that you just mentioned before, Eric, about how bombing raids or invasion of a country could be possibly based on what this unnamed astrologer is advising Reagan. And it's not usually something that's thought of as part of the presidential decision-making process, which is not to say that we're putting down, I guess, Eric, you join me in saying this, putting down people who are interested in astrology. It's just that because, I would say, because it's a topic that has gained a certain amount of acceptance, but not the kind of recognition that one usually would tend to find in matters involving presidential decisions.
I mean, you'd
has
expect,
it taken on
you'd
this
expect
much,
Ralph Cramden or Archie Bunker or somebody to sort of take an interest, and it would make a comical episode of the series to have them rearranging their whole lives to avoid some catastrophic event that would happen if they were in a certain place.
Uh-huh.
Like the Twilight Zone episode where they have this weird little machine at the diner that,
mm-hmm.
that tells them
right.
it controls their lives. It says, you cannot leave today, you cannot be in this particular place, something bad will happen to you. And the people literally become enslaved to it,
mm-hmm.
and they cannot leave, they never leave. I'm not saying astrology necessarily does that, but it can do that to you. It's sort of like gambling.
Absolutely.
Especially when you pay somebody to read your palm. I wonder if Reagan has had his palm read since he's been in office. I wonder if he's had his tea leaves scattered all over
mm-hmm.
the place. I'll tell you, Jim, this topic is so hot that people are actually coming into the studio to comment on it. And what is your name?
My name is Lauren Shepherd.
Hi, Lauren.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
You came down just to comment on this.
You know, I'm amazed. I'm amazed at...
I don't know how you got past the security guard, but...
In fact, I kind of believe... Actually, I feel kind of confident. I feel good about him really seeking out seeking out the stars and trying to find, information.
You think it might keep him from doing other bad things?
I think it's going to keep him occupied. It's going to keep him on track. I feel sort of good about it, actually.
Uh-huh.
The information we're getting from President Reagan now is really brilliant, and I feel confident
with
his new form of information.
How do you think the Soviets are taking this latest bit of news?
I think they're having a field day with it, and I don't blame them. I'd have a good time, too. I think it's great.
I wonder if there are going to be 12 political parties eventually in this country, major parties for all of the different signs of the zodiac.
One party for each sign of the zodiac.
Yeah.
You know, there's a 13th sign of the zodiac, which no one ever talks about?
No, what's
well,
that?
Because 13 is an unlucky number. Now, I think that's why 13 is an unlucky number, because there's this other sign, I think it's only partially in the zodiac, and I don't know all the facts, I'll admit that right off the bat, but I've heard of it, there's a 13th sign, and... I don't know how you get born under it, but maybe they just adjusted all the other signs so that no one got born under it. Although I think if you're born under Cancer, that's not a good sign anyway, you know. But everyone calls that moon children or something bizarre like that.
Moon children.
I was born under a stop sign, actually. I don't know if that
stop sign, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's certainly something. And our thanks go out to the Reagan administration for continuing to provide this program with all kinds of fun things to talk
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
our phone number is 632-6901. There's another thing that was in the Times today that I thought was interesting. Made me rush right home and turn on my computer because it says the year 2000, which is coming up. Year 2000 is only, 12 years away?
Mm-hmm.
Less than 12 years away. 11 years away.
Right.
11
and
a half.
Years away.
the dawn of the new century may come as a shock to thousands of computers around the world. You know why, Jim?
Why is that?
Well, think of it. The date is entered in two-digit format.
Mm-hmm.
What's today's date? That's the 7th of March?
Right.
May?
Right.
It'll be 5/7/88.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after 99, what do you do?
00.
00. Except
right.
A lot of computers think that means 1900.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
This may seem like a silly thing, but when you consider how much of our lives are recorded by computer,
sure.
How much of our bill-paying habits and our bank loans and everything are controlled by computers, it's going to be a catastrophe if we don't start doing something about it now. And that's basically what this article says. Programs that record years in two digits and know no time but the 1900s may be stymied by the year 2000. As things now stand, many computers would malfunction or miscalculate because they rely on programs that fail to recognize that the day after December 31st, 1999, is January 1st, 2000. In fact, I can name more than a few people that don't recognize that fact. Some computer programmers are already at work on the problem, but most experts in data processing say ample time remains to avoid trouble. Although everyone agrees that the blind spot exists, expert opinion differs widely about how pressing the problem is and how to address it. The problem, which could infect information ranging from pension records to credit ratings, stems from the widespread practice since the 1960s of programming computers to identify the year by reading two digits and assuming 19 is in front of
mm-hmm.
them. When the 1900s are over, many of today's programs will figure that the 00 or 01 in the date refers to 1900 or 1901. The great comfort is many of today's problem programs will have been replaced by 1999 in the normal course of business, and new software will be written with the millennium in mind. This is not just a change of centuries. This is not just going from 1799
right.
to 1800. We're starting a whole new unit here, 2000.
That's, right.
That's only happened once before
mm-hmm.
in the whole history of,
yes.
of mankind.
Yes.
Now, just as important, the changes necessary to keep a computer from getting confused by dates after 1999 are often simple. William H. Anderson, a spokesman for Prudential Bach... Is that how you say
I think it's Prudential Beach.
Prudential Beach, okay.
I believe.
Securities Incorporated said, none of the changes are fun, but they also are not brain surgery. Few types of data are so widely used in software as dates. Over the years, programmers have used countless methods of coding dates, many of them so obscure that a programmer searching a program for portions dealing with dates may have trouble locating all of them. And unless vulnerable programs are replaced or repaired, the oddity could affect such things as insurance coverage, receipts and payments by businesses, inventories, and factory production schedules. It could be an absolute horror show for anyone with mainframe computers, said Anthony Graffio, the senior vice president of information systems at the Home Group, a New York-based insurance company. The joke in computing circles is that every data processing manager, no matter how old they are, is saying they plan to retire early in 1999. I went home, I turned on my computer today, and I run the MS-DOS operating system. I don't know, Jim, if you're familiar with computers, many microcomputers, they call them. But MS-DOS is the basic operating system that most computers seem to use these
mm-hmm.
days. And I decided to change the date and see what would happen. I changed the date to December 31st, 1999. Had no trouble doing that. It even told me what day it was, what day of the week that was.
Mm-hmm.
And I set the time to be 11:59 and 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of had my own little countdown, bottle
mm-hmm.
of champagne, the whole works.
Uh-huh.
And
nice.
The thing counted down. It didn't count down. I just kept checking the date to see what the date was. And when it got past midnight, it did it fine. It went to January 1st, 2000. No problem. Got the day right and everything.
Great.
However, I will have a problem on January 1st, 2100.
Oh. You know,
for some reason, my computer does not recognize 2100. It only recognizes the year 2099 as the last possible year. 2100, I'm out of luck.
Well,
and I might have to buy a new computer.
What does it think? It thinks it's 1100?
It doesn't change the date at all.
Perhaps
it is perpetually December 31st, 2099.
Perhaps the program was written with some by far-sighted people who envisioned the coming of the new millennium, but they figured that they wouldn't have to bother with more than the first 100 years of the millennium that someone else would take care of that.
I can't imagine what they were thinking. I mean, they expect the whole world to end? Do they think just because their lifetime is over, it doesn't matter what the rest of the world does? I think it's rather inconsiderate.
Well, I don't know, but I don't know. I would say
While we're on the subject, what's going to happen after 99-99 when we get to the year 10,000?
No, you're absolutely right about that. I agree. I agree 100%. It's just that I think that at least they were considerate enough to recognize the coming of 2000. But I would say that you have a good point in that even before 2000 comes, planning may be necessary involving the use of computers, where people would want to do calculations or do planning of different sorts that involve 2000, 2100, and as you say, beyond that millennium.
If any of our listeners have computers and they're close to them, I'd like for them to turn them on, assuming they have date functions to start with. Some computers don't even have date functions. And enter the date, December 31st, 1999, 11:59 and 30 seconds. See if it changes the date to 2000, or see if it completely messes it up. And find out when it will. How far ahead will your computer go before it doesn't know what day it is?
That should be very interesting.
And right now, I found that the MS-DOS operating system makes it to the year 2099 without a problem. I don't know when it begins. I've never tried going back to see when the whole thing started. I mean, some computer systems you can go back for some reason to 1901 and start off there if you feel like it.
I see. Well, there's...
I mean, imagine on your phone bill, you know, if it can't figure out 2000 or something. You know, it might charge you a cheaper rate for back in those years.
What the rate would be in 1900, yeah. Must have been a heck of a great rate.
Yeah.
The Don Amici rate.
I always like to know how people got phone bills back then. Was it like a receipt you get at a restaurant or something?
I don't know. It's a good question.
I mean, probably the phone companies were the first people to actually use computers for customer bills, because how else could you do it, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, because otherwise it would be a rather onerous task for billing. Well, there is something on my mind, Eric.
Okay.
A few things, actually, that I wanted to get off my mind. First of all, the Goofy controversy.
The Goofy controversy?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, is Goofy a dog or a horse? Now, this
is a cartoon character, you mean?
Yes. This is the Walt Disney character. This has been a raging question amongst associates of mine for years. It's something that has burned itself into my consciousness for I don't know how long. Sometimes I lie awake at night. Sometimes I'm jolted awake at night. I would say that in order, descending order of importance as far as what's on my mind, as far as the less mundane questions, the more overridingly timeless questions, I would say is that enter my mind personally is, first of all, oh my gosh, isn't it extraordinary? What is the meaning of it all? What happens after my life is over? Is there any state of awareness in death? And oh my gosh, as a corollary to that, what awareness, if anything, was before my birth? And then right after that comes, what is Goofy? Is he a dog or a horse? And then everything else after that in descending order. And
yeah.
You know what it is that gets me about it? You see, probably most people would
say... Well, I'm glad you have the sense to realize that it's not the number one issue.
No, I wouldn't say it's the number one
because
issue.
There are people around that do say that.
Well,
and it's
really
not the number one. I mean, the whole thing about wondering what comes after death and before birth, I think that it comes a step. I mean, people will debate me on this, but it comes a step before this whole controversy, I think.
I would say so, although I suppose that it's not unreasonable to imagine that Goofy himself can lie awake at night trying to figure out whether he's a dog or a horse and then worry about everything else. But you see, you know...
Imagine that.
Yeah, because, you know, gosh, am I a dog or a horse? You know, because, you see, the thing that strikes me about it is most people, I think, when they're confronted with this question, initially say, oh, he's a dog, of course. And I can understand why they'd say that, because his ears are long and floppy, and a horse's ears aren't long and floppy. They have little points on them, and they're little short things, and they stand up. But his ears definitely droop down, and they're long, and it looks like some kind of droopy dog ears. But, go ahead.
Have you ever tried contacting Walt Disney, not Walt Disney himself, he's frozen, but the whole corporation, whatever it is now, Epcot Center,
actually, no,
and
I
asking
haven't.
Them, I mean, do you, Was Goofy supposed to be something?
I suppose he was some kind of animal. You see, the thing is, he looks like he's probably a dog, but here's the thing that gets me about it. It's kind of this little sociology that enters into this, I guess, so whatever, for want of a better word. Consider the character of Pluto, okay? Mickey Mouse's dog, his pet, okay? Now,
I was thinking of Pluto.
Were?
I was thinking of Pluto instead
of
Goofy.
Now, you know who Goofy
is. I'm all mixed up now.
Okay, Goofy is... Now, okay, here's the thing. Okay, Pluto is Mickey's pet dog, and Pluto doesn't wear any clothing, which is logical for somebody's pet dog, not unless, you know, we're talking about like a sweater on a cold day, but ordinarily, he doesn't wear any clothing, okay?
Uh-huh.
And he has a little doghouse in the back of where Mickey Mouse's house is, and... Mickey Mouse owns Pluto. Mickey Mouse wears clothes. He wears those shoes and the pair of shorts and I guess a little shirt, you know, whatever. And Minnie Mouse wears shoes and dress and such. And so in the sociology of Walt Disney characters, the mice are like people in a way. They have the privileges that humans have to have own houses and drive cars and walk on two legs instead of on all fours. And they, you know, I think I mentioned they wear clothes. And they have pets. So he has a dog named Pluto. So you would think from that the Walt Disney sociology puts dogs as being pets the way we think of dogs. They're uh-huh. domesticated animals. But they don't wear clothes. They don't walk on two legs unless they're doing tricks. They have their own house, but it's called a dog house. I mean,
right.
they don't pay a mortgage on it. You know,
no.
That kind of thing. Okay,
like Snoopy. He walks on 2 feet, has a doghouse.
He does, but you see, that's kind of... But you see, there we're talking about a different system. We're talking about the Peanuts system, and here we're talking about the Disney system.
Did you notice, by the way, that Peanuts has cut down from 4 blocks to 3 in their comic strip over the last few weeks?
Yes.
In fact, some days it's 2.
Yes.
I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think that... Well, I don't know, actually. I really don't know what that means.
Well,
but it's an interesting
We have
question.
A flotilla of calls
we
here.
We do. I was just going to...
Somebody might have an answer.
An answer. I was just going to say, if I could just set up the... Well, you think we should take calls right away? I will, but I just wanted to finish the thought
okay,
that
so
I
I'll
had
finish
about,
the thought.
About the clash of sociology there. If we look at Peanuts, yeah, it's like half and half. Like, Snoopy's kind of a person, he's kind of a pet. But in Walt Disney's world, as it were, Pluto is a pet. He's just basically a pet, and Mickey is a person, okay? Now, with Goofy has human privileges. Goofy and Mickey could meet on the street and
uh-huh.
they could say hi. Hey, ooh, hi, how you doing? Oh, I'm fine. How are you? Oh, what did you get together? Oh, we'll get together tonight. Oh, okay, you know. And they'll go into somebody's house and they'll sit down together.
Yeah. So what?
And
what,
Goofy could conceivably pet Pluto if he went to
what
visit Mickey.
Social class is Goofy too? Is a better question.
Well,
I think.
Well, it's I'm not exactly saying social class in the sense of upper class, lower class. That you know, in the like class distinction. What I mean is Goofy. Let's say can own a house with a mortgage on it,
uh-huh.
can drive a car. You
yeah.
see him portrayed as, and he wears clothing.
Yeah.
So he really can't be a dog.
I don't think he can be a dog. No.
Instead, I would think maybe he's a horse, but he doesn't have ears like a horse.
Maybe he's a donkey. Let's take this call and find
out.
Good evening. Here I'm Brain Damage.
Hello. I'm calling to add my piece. Although I was speaking with you earlier, I'd like to add something about the psychology of dogs from personal experience. I just got home and discovered that our large brown dog ate the entire box of Fryhofer's sweet buns that we bought last night. And I'm wondering what kind of a sneaky mentality dogs could have that we never really thought about. What kind of insidious things could be going on in their mind that enables a dog to open an entire package of...
Well, wait a minute. Wait. You say sneaky. Did the dog deny it?
The dog not only denied it, but he literally tried to lick me to make up for it. I mean, it just, he sort of said it wasn't his fault, it was society, and I really resent that tactic whenever he tries that.
Well, I mean, why not blame society? I mean, society did put him in that place at that time.
Well, no, society didn't ask him to go upstairs and open the Fryhofer's.
Yes, but did you have an explicit agreement with him not to open the Fryhofer's?
Well, not to open Entenmann's. We never actually specifically mentioned Fryhofer's.
Well, that's a very good point. You may have told him, don't open the Entenmann's cake, and he apparently did follow that instruction, but when he saw a different brand coming in,
he
might have assumed that it was okay to open the
most
Fryhofer's.
Most of these things are based on simple misunderstandings.
Yeah.
Simple misunderstandings, and you know, I would suggest you sit down with them and lay out what the ground rules are, And I'm sure, you know, if you show respect towards him, it's a him, I assume.
Yes, he'll
show respect back to you. It's really, you know, it's understanding. That's what you have to strive for in cases like this.
But what do I do about my liver dinner from two nights ago that he also ate?
Well,
I would thank God that it's gone.
But there again, did he? How did he get to it? Did he open the refrigerator?
No, actually, it was lying in the bottom of a garbage can.
Oh, he got to the garbage can.
Well, now, is that where you keep your dinner normally, in the bottom of a garbage can? I mean, I think you have to take your habits in hand. You see?
Yes. Well, this is true. I wonder in which order he ate them. I wonder if he ate the sweet buns first, or whether he saved it until he had finished eating the liver.
Well, you know, I had this discussion just the other night. In fact, we were debating whether or not Hungarians ate dessert first. Because, you know, I was in a Hungarian place, and the dessert came before the dinner on the menu.
Oh,
so I was wondering, you know, is there a country someplace where people eat the dessert first?
Actually,
and why not? I mean, they read from right to left in China, and from down to up, and all that kind of thing. Why not eat dessert first?
All the kids
seem to like that. You find a children-dominated society, and you'll find a country that eats dessert first.
I think that in China, the what we might think of as dessert-type food is eaten first, and for a logical reason, because it's apparently beneficial to get something of a sweeter nature into your system for good digestion of food that follows. So
uh-huh.
I think they do...
They think everything out very carefully in China.
Yes.
Right, especially if it's liver, which definitely you would need to coat your stomach with something.
Yeah, so in answer to your question, I think that it doesn't really matter. The dog could very well have had both at the same time. You see, these are our values.
There's a missing clue, which is that he actually dragged the liver all the way down to the first floor of our house before he ate it.
Uh-huh.
So he felt that the dining environment wasn't exactly superb, and he wanted to take it into better quarters.
Uh-huh. Sounds very discerning to me.
Well, dogs do have their own way of doing things. If you give a dog something, he usually takes it someplace else, just in case you change your mind and decide to take it back. They take it far away from you. Every dog has their habits as far as the
Absolutely.
Way they handle things like that.
I was going to ask, though, just to get your vote, do you think Goofy's a dog or a horse or something else?
That has bothered me for many years. I think that he's a cross between a donkey and a dog, and I think that he's not meant to really be a dog that much. I've never seen him go woof or arf.
No, absolutely not. And he walks on twos also. He walks on both legs, whereas Pluto has to walk on all fours.
Yeah, that's always bothered me.
So it just, I just can't understand what they intend him...
Does he have a tail?
Goofy, I can't envision. Usually he's wearing pants, and I don't think there's a tail sticking out of it, so unless he rolls it up inside his pants, I don't know if he's meant to. His snout, it's hard to say whether it looks like it could be a cross, as you say, between a dog and a donkey, or maybe even a horse also when they're in it. But it's interesting why it's so kind of indistinct, and I'm trying to remember whether there were ever any cartoons where both Pluto and Goofy appeared at the same time.
Yes, there were.
There were.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very significant. That's fascinating, because that would imply that it wasn't even a case of the Disney studio saying, well, Goofy is a dog, but he's in his own world. So he and Pluto had their paths crossed.
All right, so I think we need to whip out the old VCR and see what happens in these particular episodes.
Definitely. I also wonder if it's possible for us to contact somebody. Is there like a 1-800-call-Goofy number or something?
Well, no, it's interesting you should say that. I can call 800 information and ask if there is a number for Walt Disney or Epcot Center or something like that.
Yeah, and they might still be open there.
It's possible. It's a 24-hour town.
Yeah.
But I might also suggest that if there are any enterprising Stony Brook students out there listening, if you could con a professor into accepting this, it would make a darn good topic for a term paper or even a dissertation.
I'll say.
As a matter of fact, I will welcome any of the students who will be taking my Composition 101 course to do this. So if you're going to be taking a course over the summer... you may want to consider asking your teacher if it's okay to turn this in.
That's that's an excellent idea. There are many different applications for it.
Well, we might even be able to get a course started in this.
Sure, as an essay or
I mean that too
course.
Because just look at Bugs Bunny. I mean,
sure.
The guy is. I mean, I know. You know, I assume he's. That's a right phrase for him. The guy. You
I
know,
would say
he's
yeah.
a rabbit. I know
oh,
that.
Yes.
But he is an anarchist. There is no question about it. The rabbit is an anarchist. He defies all authority.
Yes.
He does what suits him. He doesn't obey any rules. In fact, he disobeys most rules. And he causes chaos wherever he goes.
Yes.
And he's not the only one, either.
No.
I have a question, though, about ducks, as a matter of fact. Akita, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. Going back to Donald Duck.
Yes.
In the early cartoons, all the characters turn around and say to Donald Duck, "I can't understand you when you're talking."
That's
and as
right.
a matter of fact, at one point, Daisy Duck even says, "Donald, I can't understand you." And there's a wonderful cartoon where he takes a speaking pill so that people can understand him.
I remember that. And then his voice, I think, becomes very cultured and stentorian.
That's
you know,
right.
As I remember, how do you do?
That's
that
right.
kind of. That's right. It's a very funny cartoon. And speaking of Donald Duck. Yeah. Speaking of Donald Duck and anarchy, yeah, yes, indeed. That's I think so too. I have heard it suggested by people. I can't understand what you're saying, Donald. Can you take a pill, Donald?
I feel I should step in here to sort of regain control here.
Well, I was going to say that Donald Duck is considered sometimes an anarchist also because he sometimes goes, he gets completely enraged if things don't go his way, and he becomes inarticulate. But the thing about Donald Duck in the Disney studio, also a very funny type of, I don't know what they had in mind when they dressed him. I mean, the guy wears a cap and a tunic, but no pants. I mean, what is the Disney studio up to?
It's something.
I don't want to speculate any further because it's not 12 midnight yet. But I'm a live person. But I mean, I'll just leave it at that. You know, and it's just kind of in, you know, he's just not completely dressed. And I don't understand why. You know, what the deal is. Well, yes, go ahead, Eric.
Well, let me give out our phone number one more time, 632-6901. I'm going to try to get 800 information now and see if we can get to the bottom of this. I want to thank our caller.
Okay,
and,
thank you.
Thank you very much. And a great idea about a topic for a composition or an essay or even some interdisciplinary course involving both biology and sociology and, even, I guess, psychology, possibly history, anthropology. I mean, I don't know. A number of things come to mind. Yeah, but basically, I'd say biology and sociology. Would be a fascinating,
at least
two fascinating perspectives,
at least,
and in an English course as well.
Well, very
good topic.
I think we're going to have some answers here. We're going to give a call to the 800 number, and we actually have the 800 number. Susan is here. Say hi, Susan.
Hi.
Susan actually got the 800 number. There
what?
Is an 800 number for Disney.
You might want to call the operator anyway, just to make sure. It might even be more interesting to hear the operator give you the number.
Well, it's an automated operator. I know that.
Right. And eventually. And why don't you call that number and see what you get?
Okay. Now, Susan, did you ask Jim if he wants anything from the Chinese place?
Oh, yes.
As I understand, is this the last night we're going to be able to order something from the Chinese place?
I think so for a while. I'm not sure.
Why is that?
Because I'm quitting.
You're quitting? You're quitting as the Chinese food getter on Saturday nights?
I'm graduating.
That doesn't mean you can't do this. In fact, you'll be more qualified to do this if you've graduated.
Well, it's the last official night.
Last
it's
official.
The last
okay, so it won't
night.
Be official after this. Fine.
No, it's the last known of night. How's that?
Okay.
It's the last definite night that we can do this.
Well, that's historic. Yeah, I definitely. Well, I don't want that much, but do they have a spring roll?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Not an egg roll, a spring roll.
Spring roll, yes. Oh, that's wonderful.
You get into fights in the street about the differences.
That's right. Yes, as a matter of fact, I think Goofy preferred egg rolls and Pluto spring rolls, isn't it, to add more confusion. But I'll take a spring roll and I'll take a Coke. Can of Coke.
No, they don't sell the Coke. We have to buy that downstairs.
Oh, okay, fine.
They might send it for free. I'm not sure.
Well, if not, then
you
will buy it downstairs.
George.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. So I guess a spring roll will be nice. Yeah, that'll do it. I guess maybe I should order one other thing so that to beef up the order a little bit.
Yeah, they might be offended if you only order a spring roll.
Well, we are ordering other stuff, so you don't have to beef it up.
Oh, okay.
Last week we got this really spicy. It came in a little plastic container. And it was the most deadly thing. I mean, just pouring it, my mouth started to burn.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even touch it,
wow.
and it was having an effect on me.
It was sort of like crushed peppers in like a pepper syrup.
Wow.
Yeah, I've seen those peppers when they're whole. I never saw them all ground up before. And the thing is, it had a sort of a juice to it, so it kind of flowed, it infiltrated
right.
everywhere, burned holes in the plates.
You could smell it.
Gee.
You could smell it burn.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah. In fact, it set off something, didn't it?
So would you like some of that?
I don't think so. I mean, it's interesting. Sounds interesting. And I like spicy Chinese food, but I don't think I'm really up for spicy stuff tonight. So I think the spring roll will do me very nicely. And I'm just trying to think of this one other thing. I guess the spring roll is a just small kind of thing.
Is spring roll supposed to have meat in it?
I think it has shrimp in it. I'm not sure.
This spring roll doesn't have... That's shrimp roll. This spring roll doesn't have shrimp in it. It has pork in it or ham in it. Pork in it, I guess.
Oh, really?
I don't think they have, I've never heard of a ham roll.
That sounds okay, but then if that's the case, maybe I'll take a shrimp roll instead.
Okay.
Do you know what the most disgusting thing in the world is?
What's that?
The kind of egg rolls you get downstairs in the cafeteria.
That's
the same kind that you can get at supermarkets.
Why is that disgusting? It's kind of prefabricated?
Just think of it. Institutional food service producing what they call Chinese food.
I
remember going to this Chinese, quote-unquote Chinese place. I think it was in Springfield, Massachusetts, of all places. And there was not a single Chinese or even Oriental person in the whole place. It was run by a bunch of blonde-haired girls. And for some reason, they were selling Chinese food. And it was like going into a supermarket, and the stuff tasted abysmal, is the best word I can use. I don't remember it being cheap. I don't think it had any redeeming qualities whatsoever, except that it was the only one in town. But even that didn't seem to be much of an influence because no one seemed to be going to it.
Wow.
The most interesting place I've been to was this Indian place that Eric took me to.
Oh, not just Indian. It's an Indian pizza place.
Right. Pizza place slash deli. The same character.
And you can buy lotto tickets there. It's in New York City. It's
Rawalpindi lotto tickets, or
you can buy anything. You can even rent Indian videos.
You can buy cigarettes.
Anything. Really?
It's the most incredible place. It's a pizzeria in the front, Indian food in the middle, and a deli in the back, and it's all the same place.
It's pretty interesting.
And as you're giving your order to the person who's staring you in the face, you see behind him someone with his back to you in another store, which is a paper store.
Hmm.
And it's all linked together, so it's a big kind of enterprise there.
It's a
very interesting.
You can say.
It's good food, huh?
It's pretty good.
But a half hour after we left it, I have to admit I had a stomachache.
You're expected to.
It was spicy.
It's cheap too. It's cheap. You can get a full meal there for $4, $5.
Which is why Eric treated me, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's a great place to take people. You impress them. But
so shrimp roll. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, so we're set on that then. All right, we're going to...
I'm sorry. Could I also get a... it's terrible. I want to take up all this time. A wonton soup?
Sure.
That's a good idea. Why don't you get one of those for me, too?
Wonton time soup.
Thanks a lot. That's very nice.
This is the 800 number connecting right now, even as we speak.
I'm WUSB.
Stonybrook.
They should be there. It's only 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock? It's 11:33. Isn't Epcot Center in Florida?
Oh, that's right.
And I think they're in the same time zone.
This might be Disney.
Well, isn't Disney the same thing as... Well, I don't know what they do there. But it does seem to be ringing, and it doesn't seem to be answering. You asked for the number for Disney.
I asked for Epcot / Disney.
Uh-huh.
I asked, could you give me one, and she didn't tell me which one it was. She just gave me the number.
Okay, well then we will call that person. Oh.
For information on Disney World and Epcot Center, please call 407-824-8000.
407-824-4000.
That's a clever 800 number.
Now, the whole purpose of that 800 number is just to give that message out?
I think I know what happens. I think that number is probably manned during the day or during certain hours, and then when the shifts end and they don't have it manned, then you have to call a toll number. I think that's probably what it is.
The number is still, it hasn't hung up.
If I can suggest, why don't you call the operator up? And what are you doing?
I'm hitting buttons to see if it does anything else. That's not.
Why don't you call the operator up and ask her for the number for Disney? Because Disney, isn't it, like, based in California?
Yes, it is, actually.
Which means that they should...
Where in California?
I think...
Do you know how many area codes there are in California?
Isn't it Anaheim? Is that...
It's 213. No.
Oh, then it's the Los Angeles area.
213, yes, but Los Angeles is also 818, you know.
No,
they split
800.
It up.
Call 800. And
800
ask them for Disney in California.
Okay.
I know someone who worked there. Isn't that interesting? I knew a waiter who worked there.
Who worked in Disney.
At Disneyland?
He waited in Disney.
In California?
Yes. Maybe he knows what Goofy is.
Maybe.
We're asking for Disney, if I'm correct, in California.
Can I help you?
Yes, operator. We need a number for the Disney in California, please. And the world.
Disney what?
Disney anything, actually.
Information.
Just information on Disney, and it should be in California.
Okay, sir, this is 800 Directory.
I would need to know the full name. I have more than one heading under Disney in my directory.
I see. Can you isolate them by state?
These are, we handle the whole United States. Is this for the Disney Disneyland Park?
Yes, Disneyland Park.
They don't list their number in our directory. So.
Oh.
Well, what's the area code so that we can call it?
No, this is 800. Okay, do you have anything for, like, the Disney Corporation or something like that?
Sure.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I don't have anything listed just for Disney Corporation.
Do you have anything just plain Disney?
No, sir.
How about Disney Epcot Center? See if we get
I don't have a Disney Epcot Center listed. Epcot's not in California.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Why don't you do this? Why don't you ask her what the area code is so that we can call the area code operator?
I think she knows. Do you know what the area code is for Disneyland?
Sure. Long distance operator can give you the area code.
Yeah, okay, so we'll have to get them.
Yes, sir.
All right, well, thanks very much for your help. Goodbye.
He knows the area code for Disney, for...
We have consultants coming in now.
Yes.
What's the area code
right.
for?
What's the area code for where Disneyland is?
Anaheim, California, 714.
714,
yes, yeah, even another.
It is for sure, I live there.
He's the waiter I was telling you about.
Oh.
No, I wasn't a waiter.
I thought you waited, anyhow.
All right, then I guess we have to get them on the phone.
He's calling Disneyland? They're not open.
Why aren't they open? It's Saturday night, 8 o'clock, peak period.
They close at 7.
They close at 7? Well, so much for that. They're not going to be open then.
Do they have a listing under Jiminy Cricket?
We're going to have to do some research on this.
Yes, actually, I suppose if we were able to... Excuse me, sorry. If we were able to call the public information office for Walt Disney Incorporated, or whatever the corporate name is, I'm sure that they could help us. But, of course, normally on a Saturday night, the public information office isn't open, so
yeah,
we have to do it and then, you know...
At times like this, I wish Walt Disney was still alive, you know?
Yes.
They come up occasionally, these moments, where I just say, darn it all, I wish Walt Disney was still alive.
Yeah, well, he may one day be again alive.
No, that's true.
Thanks
I hear that.
Thanks for the cryogenic process.
632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Yeah, I was listening to your goofy dog or horse show, and I just wanted to tell you something that might be interesting. If you see some of the old Mickey Mouse book comics, one of the bad guys, what's his name, I think, Black Pete or something.
Uh-huh. Sir, could you just turn down your radio a little bit?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, you know, he's a cat, the one with the stubby beard?
Yeah.
And all his sidekicks look like dogs. They have floppy ears, and they wear those Lone Ranger type of masks, and they carry handguns.
Oh.
Are you familiar with them, Jim?
No, but that's interesting.
Those are in the early ones.
So
these are the comics from, like, late 50s, I would say.
So this is a cat... The bad guy is a cat, and his accomplices look like, they look like goofies, but they wear Lone Ranger masks.
Yeah, I believe that's...
Is that what you're saying, sir?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
You know, they go around creating trouble and, you know, holding up people and...
I see.
Usually, in the end, Mickey or Goofy pull out something and, you know,
they're
the victors.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
But they have shorter ears. You know, Goofy has, you know, he looks like a basset hound.
Yes, that's right. He does. You're absolutely right. He looks like a large basset hound. I agree with you 100%. And it's fascinating that Pluto, who also kind of resembles a basset hound, is somebody's pet. And Goofy, who's also from the same genus, gets to be somebody who could, like, for example, Mickey Mouse could sell or give Pluto to Goofy, and it just doesn't seem, in the sociology of it, just doesn't seem to make sense. But you know, when you mentioned some of the older Disney characters, that tripped off a memory in my mind. There used to be some Disney characters called, I think it was Horace and I think Daisy the horse, and these were two horses that walked on all fours and might have worn hats, but nothing else. I mean, they didn't wear clothes the way Goofy did. So that was in an earlier time.
Yeah.
They were definitely horses. One guy was called, actually, Horace the Horse, this one.
Yeah, Horace, and there was a cow, so Clarabelle the cow.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, these are very ancient Disney cat.
That's right. So I was thinking that maybe Goofy came from a new era or something, but I suppose...
Well, now, you know, it brings to mind here that somebody somewhere along the line must be writing all of this down. There must be a book someplace that sort of gives a chronology of all these characters, what they
probably
are, what their intention was.
I would say.
And somewhere in there hidden is the fact of just... what Goofy is.
I would say, and I think probably, and this caller has been very helpful in a number of ways, including the making the observation that he looks like a basset hound. I definitely agree. I would say he must, if I had to pick one, I would say now that Goofy is a dog. But there,
but a different kind of dog than Pluto.
Than Pluto, and that, yes, that opens up this whole additional area for questioning as to how they decided to make a dog in their system. In one case, a pet, and in the other case, potentially the master of a pet, of another dog.
That's a strong social comment, I think, is what they made.
Yes.
Can Goofy be a wolf?
A wolf?
I don't
know. That's an interesting question.
Or a coyote.
Like a Goofy kind of wolf.
That's also a very good question.
Or a prairie dog.
Or maybe
what
one
is a prairie dog?
A prairie dog,
anyway.
I think, would be much too small.
Yeah,
although
seen
I
one.
Think they've had prairie dogs on as Disney characters.
I almost ran over a prairie dog.
They're little
dog.
Tiny. I think they're rodents. They're little tiny. They're real cute. They have a prairie dog. If anybody's interested in cute animals, I think very cute, fascinating, and prairie dogs in particular, they have a whole prairie dog display at the Staten Island Zoo. It is fantastic. They have a whole bunch of these guys and gals, I guess.
Yeah,
also.
I hate to admit my ignorance so blatantly, but I didn't even know Staten Island had a zoo.
Oh, yes, it does. As a matter of fact, I went there when I was about 33 years ago for the first time, and then just a few years ago I remembered it, and then I started to go back. I went back once within about the last year and another time just a couple of years ago. And it's a small zoo, but it's interesting. They have a kitty zoo, but they also have areas that would be available.
Kitties? Wait a minute. What, they keep joking?
No. They, I mean, geared for...
I think Gerardo Rivera would be interested in that.
No. I'm sorry, sir. Yes.
Yeah, another observation is that if you observe Goofy's teeth, they look like he's a vegetarian. I mean, he doesn't have fangs like that.
Very interesting. Yeah, very interesting. That's a very good point.
Did anyone, speaking of vegetarians, reminded me of vegetarian dinosaurs, did anybody see the picture in the New York Times sometime, I believe it was the Science Times this week,
right.
They actually had a picture of what an embryo of a dinosaur looked like within the egg. It was the most incredible
that's
sight.
Amazing.
You see this little tiny dinosaur all curled up in a fetal position.
Amazing.
And they actually were able to reconstruct this based on some fossils they found. And that should be on page one, I think. That kind of
well,
picture.
Actually, that is fascinating.
It's like a being from another planet.
Yes, it's extraordinary. Extraordinary.
Well, sir, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
It's interesting hearing this one.
Okay, well,
thank you.
I think it's long overdue.
We appreciate your participation.
Have a good night.
You too.
Good night.
Question.
Yo, go ahead.
Question. Now that we're talking about covers of newspapers, did you see the cover of Newsday with
Long Island's newspaper?
Yeah.
Which somehow, for some reason, seems to be more in New York than Long Island, but go ahead. It's cheaper in New York, too, you know that.
Yeah, that's a promotional price.
Why did they have a cover page story on Nancy Reagan and the horoscope? And
it was news. We spent a good part of the show talking about that.
Oh, I wasn't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it's news. It's important. It's important goings on.
Page news.
Well,
I want to know. Inquiring minds need to know.
That's the Inquirer.
Can Sue hear
me? Susan really can't hear you. She'd have to look at your lips.
I can kind of hear him.
Because we were saying before that it would seem to merit front, even though I can understand it, strikes me as funny that it ends up on the front page, but we can kind of understand why it merits front, or I was saying I can understand why it merits front page play because, and I think Eric feels the same way, because normally you don't associate astrology with high-level decision-making, such as would come from the president's office, or even someone close to the president, such as his wife.
But there is no proof that the president made these decisions based...
No, you're right about that. It doesn't necessarily prove that he made the decisions based on astrology, but the implication is there that it might have happened that way.
Well, the funny thing was, I saw it on Nightline the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of major news stories that I don't hear. And all of a sudden, I hear everywhere that Nancy Reagan believes in astrology. That's what it is. So it kind of surprised me. But we discussed this already, so let's move on.
Yeah. Well, now, speaking of newspapers, I do have one more thing I wanted to cover tonight. If you read Newsday at some point this week, you may have seen yet another article about some poor soul that received a huge telephone bill These things. No, it wasn't. This was for calls that he didn't make.
Oh.
It happens occasionally to people, and this one was a particularly interesting one. And Jim, you might be interested in this too, because I know you don't get our edition of Newsday where you are. Oh, actually, maybe you.
Well,
do.
I get the.
What edition do you get?
I get the South Shore. Suffolk
I've never
edition.
Seen that one. I've never seen the South Shore.
You
edition.
Get the North Shore Suffolk edition.
I get the Brookhaven edition.
Oh, it's called Brookhaven.
Yeah, but there is a North Shore edition too.
Yes,
you know,
there is.
West.
I've seen that. Yes.
Yeah, but do you get Ed Lowe's column?
Yes.
The guy with the big mustache.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this article is entitled Fright Nights for Bill Payer. The monthly telephone bills for the South Shore Obstetrical and Gynecological Group generally ranged at about $350 until March, when the good doctors got hit for $3,539.73. What do you think of that? Dr. Richard Travis, who opened the four-physician practice in Hewlett 23 years ago. Hewlett, where's that?
That's, let's see, that's in western, well, it's in Nassau County. If you think of it in terms of the train of Long Island Railroad, it's on the Far Rockaway branch. It's part of what's known as the Five Towns. Let's say on the train you'd go to Valley Stream, then Gibson, then Hewlett, and uh-huh. then Woodmere, Cedarhurst, Lawrence, and Inwood, and those are the five
you
towns
said, you
the
said,
Far Rockaway.
You said Hewlett. I said Hewlett.
No, oh, actually, you're right. I'm sorry. Hewlett. You're right. Your pronunciation is correct. Hewlett.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't want to offend anybody.
Oh, no. It's on the south. It's in South Nassau County, west of Merrick.
Dr. Richard Travis opened the four-physician practice in Hewlett 23 years ago, and he handles the billing for the business. And he was puzzled, no doubt, to see this bill come in. It cited the normal $329.83 in regular charges plus a patently abnormal $3,209.90 in AT&T long-distance calls. The notations detailing the long-distance calls began with a charge for a January 26 late-night Chicago call, one that someone would have to have dialed long after the office's customary closing hour. As Travis perused the list, the calls became less and less comprehensible. The bill showed 31 direct dial calls made between midnight and 4 a.m. one night in late January, a 58-minute call to Boston in the middle of the night, a 1,029-minute conference call at 10:45 p.m., another conference call of 1,029 minutes that cost $264, and many calls to a number that was not a number, but an alphabetical designation, WHPLAGTC. That's what showed up in the numbers column. And I got one of those on my bill once because I called it, and it stands for White Plains something teleconference. So if you call a teleconference, it doesn't print out the number for some reason. And that cost $304. It was made at 1:57 a.m., and it lasted for 1,216 minutes. Peppered throughout the list were shorter calls to Los Angeles, Houston, Amarillo, Texas, a swarm of conference calls to that strange 700 number.
After hours?
After hours. All after hours. After this guy's office was closed. Faced with so many uncalled-for calls, Travis could only think of one avenue for relief. For both his curiosity and his mounting ire, he had to call somebody. And he called the phone company, and they really weren't all that much of a help. They didn't really give him an answer. He called the phone company's president's hotline, whose agents called repair service, whose agents sent a repair service person to the office, where nothing was in disrepair. So that was a big waste of time. Travis called AT&T Security, the informal complaint branch of the Common Carrier Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission. He called the State Attorney General, the Nassau County District Attorney, the 4th Squad Detectives of the Nassau County Police Department.
And if I may just say...
Yeah.
That alone probably ran up his phone bill.
Certainly did. They assigned a detective to investigate his problem. In April, he got another mega bill detailing more late-night conference calls for more hundreds of minutes and costing more thousands of dollars. And by that time, Travis had learned of one pregnant patient who'd called the office in the middle of the night and, encountering a constant busy signal for a full 30 minutes, finally visited the hospital and asked the nursing staff to call Travis at home. Also, Travis's answering service had by that time called him in the middle of the night and told him that somebody was using his telephone at that very minute.
In the actual office?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Accompanied by a police officer, Travis visited the office and found no one, nor any trace of anyone. Unlisted numbers on the second bill included a dial-a-porn number in Los Angeles, a hospital computer modem in Sacramento, and a dormitory room, according to a nervous young man who answered in Houston, Texas. Travis was to pay $6,025.22 this week, one day this week before 5 p.m. for March and April, or be disconnected. But he finally reached a sympathetic soul in the Public Service Commission in Albany who stayed the disconnect order, while Newsday reached a sympathetic soul in New York Telephone who promised to suspend the disconnect pending a discussion with AT&T and possibly waive all the charges entirely for calls Travis did not make, also depending on what AT&T representatives said. AT&T, however, said they wanted their money from Travis. Now, folks, what do you think happened? What do you think is the explanation for this?
Do you think somebody left the office before, by the time he and the policeman got there?
I mean, somebody was in the office making these phone calls and they left.
One possibility, but I guess there are, I'm sure there are others that I can think
of. Let your imagination roam.
I would say that if someone went into the office and made these calls, they would be pretty dumb after about a month knowing that this guy's going to check up on them.
Breaking and entering? I mean, would you break into someone's offices to make phone calls? You know, it seems like kind of a risky thing to do.
It does. I would
maybe
imagine.
Maybe this guy had a credit. Does it say anything about a card number?
It was not a credit card. People do make calls on a credit card number, but these were not credit card calls. These were calls made on the phone line itself.
I would wonder about electronic manipulation.
How so?
I haven't really thought of anything specific, but where somebody, through use of a computer...
Well, you're on the right track, but it has nothing to do with computers. A lot of times people blame
computers. I'm not saying you are, but a lot of times
people say a computer was behind this, some computer hacker somewhere did this.
Well, I didn't even know there was a hacker, you know, a hacker.
It's not, really. What happened was, and this is true of many doctors and many professional people that need to have their calls go through 24 hours a day, but obviously can't be up 24 hours a day. They have an answering service. And what happens is, a lot of us have a service called call forwarding, where we're able to forward our calls to another line. However, in some places, we don't yet have that service. And in cases like that, you have to have installed what is called a call diverter. And what that does is, it takes an incoming call, switches it to another line, and transfers it to your house or to your answering service or to somebody. And very often what happens is, after that person on wherever the call ends up hangs up the phone, it trips back down to a dial tone which emanates from the telephone that made the call, that transferred the call. So in other words, if you were to call this doctor at his office and he wasn't there, after, say, two rings, his phone would pick up and transfer you to another phone. And then when that other phone hung up, you would get the dial tone of the doctor's phone. That is what's been happening. And that in fact, as they say in Newsday, a spokesman for AT&T said that the company believes Travis's call diverting equipment, which switches after-hours calls to a number picked up by his answering service, is insufficiently equipped with security apparatus to prevent some telephone whiz kid from tapping into his lines. Travis needs the diverter because New York Telephone lines for the call forwarding and call waiting features are not yet available on Hewlett. The AT&T spokesman said that his company's position on the matter is, fraud with call diverters is a common problem, and diverters are common to doctors' offices. We're not in the call diverter business. We don't make them or sell them, but some do not have certain security features built in, so that there's a possibility that if a caller stays on the line after the answering service hangs up, he will, after a minute or so, get a dial tone from the second line and be able to fraudulently make calls from that second line. Our bottom line is that customers are responsible for charges for calls made from their phones. So AT&T wants their money. There's no two ways about that.
What kind of doctor is he?
I'm not going to mention his name or his practice anymore because of the next part of the story that I'm going to relate, and I don't want people to take advantage of this person. But the equipment, I just happened to look this up in the phone book and call the number this evening, in fact, and that faulty piece of equipment is still working at this moment. In fact, I have a tape recording right here of what it sounds like, and I will guide you along as this happens, so that you'll understand what I'm talking about. First, we have our rather sick-sounding dial tone. I don't know why it sounds so bad.
Well, that's because you have to call a doctor's office.
Okay, now here we go. We're going to hear a ring after the call connects. Okay, I want you to pay attention to the sound of that ring because it's going to pick up and switch to another ring. Yeah, picked up and it switched to another ring. His phone did that. It picked up and transferred you to the answering service. And pretty soon they will answer and say something.
Doctor's office.
Which is an appropriate thing to say for an answering service answering for a doctor. They, in turn, pick up the phone. You talk to them for a little while. They hang up, and then it trips back down to a dial tone, and you're free to make calls anywhere you want. And that's what's been happening. And
if
it's a common...
one or just one until...
You always get the dial tone back. But if these people were calling a conference service, which is the most expensive thing you can call, and hooking all their friends up into it, it's quite a costly little venture.
The person who did this didn't do this accidentally.
A lot of time people just go and look for numbers like this and use them because there is no security on them.
And there's no way of knowing who...
Oh, there is. I mean, if anyone is silly enough to call it now, I'm sure they'll find out just exactly how the phone company traces calls, and they'll get all kinds of interesting little letters and visits from people. It's a common problem, and it's something that that a lot of call diverter companies simply aren't addressing. But they'll be forced to now because a lot of their customers will become irate. They'll say, you know, I'm getting huge phone bills because your machinery doesn't have basic security precautions in it. So it was an interesting article because when you first look at this article, it seems like something really unexplained is going on. And I had to laugh at it because it's so simple. The idea behind this is so simple.
Uh-huh.
And it could happen to anyone.
It's really, really something. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
And I guess we're going to end the program on a rather solemn note.
Yeah.
Because there's really not much more we can say about that. But that's... that's something. And in these days of technological revolution, we find all the more staggering things on our phone bills.
Yeah. You know, there are many advantages are sometimes offset by disadvantages, and
I have some numbers show up on my phone bill this month I didn't understand either. Mm. But usually you can just call up, and in fact, it was weird. I got a page in my phone bill from U.S. Sprint. And I had never made a U.S. Sprint call. Why was U.S. Sprint sending me a bill in my telephone
That's
company?
That's amazing.
Bill? And what it turned out to be was somebody had called my answering machine collect using a U.S. Sprint operator.
Oh, wow.
And U.S. Sprint operators don't really screen things out very well. I have heard people make collect calls, say, yeah, I want to make a collect call to Joe, and then they ring the phone, and the person picks up on the other end. The operator says, I have a collect call for Joe. Will you accept? And the person calling says, yes, I'll accept.
Oh, my.
Not the person called. And the operator says, thank you, and goes away.
Well, I was going
to
say.
Leaving the stunned person who has been called to realize that he is now being charged for something just by picking up the phone.
That's extraordinary. That's a riot. But, you know, I was also going to suggest maybe what you want to do is go home and have a long, solemn talk with your answering machine about accepting calls.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. I have even heard of cases where people go in and remotely change the messages on answering machines to say, hello, yes, I'll accept. And that's all they have to say. Of course, I don't know what good it'll do to make a collect call to an answering machine. You know, you're not going to get much response from it.
No, but you can leave a message. It's really important to you to leave a message for somebody.
You can leave a half-hour message for someone and just keep rubbing it in that they're being, in fact, charged for this.
Exactly.
And just imagine their ire in the morning when they listen to it.
Listen, although, if that person trying to think of the word, who is wronged by the person making the call,
uh-huh.
takes the tape and takes both the incoming message tape and the outgoing message tape and shows that the outgoing message tape says, hello,
yeah.
I accept.
Yeah.
They can, I think, make a good strong case that nobody in their right mind would do that and that this must have been done remotely. And then when they have produced the incoming message tape that for a half an hour has some wag going on about, hey, this really is something. I'm charging you all this money.
In most cases.
It should, you know, be a good way to.
In the vast amount of cases, you can just go to the phone company and say, you know, I shouldn't be charged for this.
Yeah.
And a lot of people complain about this. Usually, the phone company will just wipe it off. And if it's something that you did wrong, they'll just say, don't do that again. Like, don't let your little kid call up the conference service and speak for 6 hours. In most cases, they will just give you a credit because it's really not costing them all that much to do that. And it's better that they do that than have a really angry customer and a lot of bad publicity. But if they don't do it, publicity is the key.
Yes.
You know, go to your local newspaper and make a big stink about it. And you'll get results that way, I guess. But this is a topic for another show sometime in the future, which I'd certainly love to devote time to, because it's something that's affecting us all. Phone bills and new technology and that kind of thing.
Even affects Goofy.
And Goofy, yes. Well, I promise I will look into this. I will try to find an answer to the Goofy saga. we'll keep following the Reagans and their astrological predictions. Now, what else did we cover tonight?
Oh, let's
Chinese
see.
Food.
Chinese food. Yeah, well, is it here yet?
Not yet.
How long does it take to get here?
20 minutes. Usually 40
Why does it take
minutes?
So long to get here? It's only
usually takes 40, 45 minutes.
Wow, that's incredible.
And prairie dogs at Staten Island.
Prairie dogs.
Real cute. They have little hands. You know, maybe next time we can talk about it.
Little hands, yes.
Little hand-like claws.
Well, Jim, it's been fun having you up here. I guess we'll
Thank
see you,
you
again in 3 weeks.
I'd love to. Thank you very much
for
having me.
Brain Damage is, of course, on every week at this time. Tune in again next week at this time. You'll hear us saying goodbye, but tune in 2 hours before that, and you'll hear us saying hello. And we'll have all kinds of fun then. Stay tuned for the brothers with their lobotomy a couple hours coming up, and the metal show after that. And Morning Star after that?
Yeah.
Morning Star. Bill Lazaroff and the Oldies, and Charlie Backfish. Have I missed anything?
Then we got a couple other afternoon shows.
Sermonette.
Let me see.
Afternoon show. Oh, we have a program guide.
And Jazz on the Air.
Do you want to give out the number for the program guide?
Sure, if you want to receive your own program guide.
If you want to receive your own program guide, all you have to do is call a machine. That's right. It's not even a machine. It's like a computer. And you call it and you leave. It's sort of like an answering machine. You leave your name and your address, and we will send you our new program guide directory, which will tell you how to translate our schedule so that you can understand what's on. A program guide. Yeah, a regular program guide. That number is 632-6498. Area code 516, 632-6498.
And I sent a whole bunch of people who called last week some bumper stickers today.
Yeah,
Android
you'll get bumper
Android
stickers
Android
as well. Yeah, so it's to your advantage to call that number. You can call it 24 hours a day because it's not ever waking anybody up. It's just a computer. 632-6498. That's the number for the bumper stickers. Eric Corley here saying goodnight for now. Stay tuned for the brothers. So we have gone over into their time once again, and apologize for that. But we'll be back next week. Brain Damage.